from HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number one, recorded Friday, December 23rd, 2005. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Automated QA, makers of Test Complete, providing automated testing of Windows, .NET Framework, Java, and web applications. Online at www.automatedqa.com. And by peterbloom.com. Start with better controls, finish with better sites. Online at peterblum.com. Support is also provided by franklins.net, training developers to work smarter, and now offering public and private hands-on classes in VB.NET 2005 and ASP.NET 2.0. Online at www.franklins.net. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading Microsoft .NET magazine. Online at dotnet.sys-con.com. And now, let me introduce to you the star of the show, Scott Hanselman, and your host with the most, the toast of the East Coast, and I don't mean to boast, and I didn't write this, really, Carl Franklin.
Hello, and welcome to Hansel Minutes. This is Carl Franklin, host of .NET Rocks, and what we plan to do here is bring you Scott Hanselman in all his glory every week with stories from the field. And we'll get his ideas about what the show is and a little bit of the history of why we're doing this. I don't really have an introduction prepared for Scott. I've had him on .NET Rocks a couple of times, and he's also a regional director like myself from the Portland area. He works in the banking industry and works on really, really powerful ASP.NET systems that have to be absolutely perfect. You know, when you're dealing with banking, there is absolutely no room for error. So, you know, to say that he's a little bit high strung is maybe an understatement. I mean, he's very, very careful about his work, but he's also brought more tools and references to external tools to .NET Rocks than I think I've ever seen in my life. He's got a list of tools on his blog that just defies imagination. And every time we talk to him, he's always introducing me to some new tool. He introduced me to CodeRush, and he introduced a lot of our audience to a lot of the tools that we use now all the time. So without any further ado, on this premiere episode of Hansel Minutes, let's just introduce the man, Scott Hanselman. Hi, Scott.
Hi. That was a very kind and overly affluent introduction, but I'd very much appreciate it.
You are a little high-strung, aren't you?
I'm known to be a little type A, but we do what we can.
Right.
Someone asked me what my hobby was, and not having a hobby has a tendency to give you a lot of time to do this kind of crap.
Right. And first of all, before, let's just get it out of the way. Congratulations on your new child.
Thank you very much. His name is Zenzo, and he's pushing 7 pounds now. He's 3 weeks and 3 days old. And I'm up to my neck in poop, but that's the way it should be.
All right. So let's tell everybody why this show exists.
Sure. So briefly, and people who've read my blog will probably catch me on this, that I've not been too much of a fan of podcasting.
I think the word was podcasting sucks.
Podcasting, yeah. Podcasting sucks, I think, has been said a couple of times. You're more than welcome to look it up on the blog. It's the lack of content.
Right.
I don't want podcasting to be, hey, Mike, you know, picture, you know, people always say blogging is way, the way blogging is because people like to post pictures of their cat.
Right.
And I was worried, and I am worried that podcasting can very much become a discussion of pictures of your cat. And, like just even for an example, to give you an idea of how high strung I am, we've been talking for 3 minutes and I feel that there's been no significant content yet. That's how nervous I am that I want to make sure we've got a lot of good content in Hansel Minutes because it's not Hansel Hours.
Right, right. It is going to be a shorter show.
And yeah, it's going to be a little bit shorter show, and it's going to be the kind of show that I think someone could listen to on the way to work and hopefully have a bit more information, a little less talk, and a little more content. I'm going to talk about tools, new tools that I've found, tools that I'm currently using, things that are really utilitarian. You know, that's a really good word, actually.
I love
right
that
there.
Word. Yeah.
I think if Hansel Minutes could be anything, I would like it to be utilitarian.
Mm-hmm.
Tools of the week, you know, what's hot, what are the great things that are people are talking about on the blog. I think it would like to be a podcast for people who don't have time to read the Scoble-sized chunk of blogs that are out there.
Right.
I know I read about 250 blogs a day using FeedDemon, and I know that I don't have the patience to read 500 or 700 or whatever amount Scoble reads. I'm sure most people don't have the patience or the time to read that much content.
Yeah.
So if I can provide some benefit by breaking that information down, then that's great.
We should also say that we already recorded one of these, and we were going to call it the Midweek Geek, and we just decided to call it Hansel Minutes. I think that you came up with that name, didn't you?
No, the etymology of Hansel Minutes is from Travis Illig. Travis Illig is a engineer that I work with who has a blog called Paresthesia, and Hansel Minutes is what is a unit of time when you ask Scott Hanselman for how long something will take. And there's a Hansel Minutes conversion factor. I have a tendency to say, oh, yeah, I can write that up in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Or, oh, yeah, that'll take about a half an hour.
Right.
And then they usually apply a Hansel Minutes conversion factor and find out that it'll really take 3 days to write the code.
So let's just dive into the content, and as we're going to do every week. So what do you got for us this week?
Well, there's two tools that I've been using this last couple of weeks that have really been making my life a lot easier. So far, these are not shareware. These are just lovin' that has been passed on from the .NET community,
mm-hmm.
from two individuals in particular. The first one is Kenny Kerr's Window Clippings. Window Clippings, and you can get this at tinyurl.com/BDV as in Victor, Z as in Z, K. tinyurl.com/BDVZK.
Now, I'm curious as to why you're not using Shrinkster.
Because tinyurl has less letters in it than Shrinkster does.
Right, but the actual, you know, the cryptic part of it has more characters.
Six, one half dozen the other. There's a particular tool I use that sits in my tray that lets me automatically tinyurl everything that gets cut into my clipboard. I started using tinyurl a long time ago. And
We're comparing notes, I have the same tool for Shrinkster, Shrinklet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So yeah, tinyurl is actually, as an aside, tinyurl and Shrinkster, anything at all that will take a five-line long URL and turn it into something shorter is great. I'm actually debating creating one where I would just be able to say hanselman.com/tools/4.
Yeah.
And I may actually set that up for the show.
All right. So let's talk about this thing.
Okay. So Kenny Kerr, as a blogger, and he's got a blog up at weblogs.asp.net/Kenny Kerr, and Window Clippings is a print screen tool, but there's a million different print screen tools out there, and most people just use Alt Print Screen. But one of the things that Kenny noticed is that in Windows, the corners of the Explorer window, and most Windows, anytime that you have a themed Windows XP theme, particularly the default theme, actually have rounded edges. If you take a look real mm-hmm. close at your Windows Explorer window, or even the chat window that I've got open with Carl right now, you'll see that you've got rounded edges. When you do a print screen, you end up with a rectangular region, and the background color does not end up matching whatever color you're going to be rendering that image onto. So
right.
typically, you just put that window over a white background, and you just kind of lie and suffer with that. What Kenny's created is a real nice tool that lets you double-click on his icon in the tray, and he will create an irregular region, a non-rectangular region, and create a transparent PNG. A PNG,
nice.
Of course, is a better graphics format.
Portable network graphics. Yeah, this is a 24-bit alpha channel supporting, you know, so therefore transparency supporting format.
Exactly. You've got an alpha. You've got 8 bits for red, green, and blue, and an additional 8 bits for a total of 32 for the alpha channel, exactly.
Yep.
So his tool will let you do this. When you double-click on the tool in the tray, the screen goes gray in that kind of way, when when you see Windows XP shutting down. Everything goes gray. You move your mouse over the window you want, double-click on it. That one jumps out of the screen, indicating, is this the one you want? And then in his options, he can automatically save the file into a folder on your desktop, which for me is great because then I can immediately blog it from BlogJet.
Yeah.
BlogJet.com, which is a tool I use to post to DOS blog.
So,
or he'll automatically put it in the clipboard.
This is, we should talk about BlogJet too. This is an interesting thing. Obviously, you know, getting pictures in a blog is tricky because you have to have access to your web server and then you have to make a URL to it and then include that URL in an image tag, blah, 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 blah. So what does this do?
BlogJet
does that for you?
Yeah, BlogJet is an offline blogging, blog writer. It supports a whole host of blogging APIs like the Meta Weblog API and the Blogger API. And additionally, like these are ones, of course, that DOSBlog supports. DOSBlog has its own API, but it's not something that is caught on in a widespread way. We support the Blogger standard API and the Meta Weblog API, which adds the support for categories. You load up BlogJet, which is a very small kind of applet. It's really just hosting the IE editable DHTML region, so it gives you the same kind of HTML generation support that IE's editable divs gives you.
Uh-huh.
And you say, I'm going to be using a DOS blog, or I'm going to be using a community server, and it will automatically configure the appropriate API. You give it the endpoint, the URL, to your particular blog. And then since DOSBlog and most blogs don't support posting of images, it has a very clever hack. It will post the blog text via the blogging API, and then it will do a parallel FTP upload.
Nice.
Of the image, and then automatically turn your relative URLs into absolute URLs and vice versa. So with DOSBlog, it's a fantastic, fantastic tool. I believe it's the only one for DOSBlog.
And that's at blogjet.com, we should say.
That is at blogjet.com. And if you go up on my blog right now and search for DOSBlog, one of the most recent posts is actually a gentleman has done a fairly complete analysis of every single offline blogging tool he could find. BlogJet's a very popular one. Another one that's very popular is called w.blogger. Except Blogger is spelled A-R, B-L-O-G-G-A-R, W-Blogger. And this gentleman has done a very extensive offline analysis of all the different tools you could post to your blog with and whether or not they work with DOSBlog.
Yeah.
He's done a very nice compatibility matrix. So Window Clippings is the tool from Kenny that I've been using to do my my posting of images.
That's
it's
great.
It's pretty nice, and it'll even do very, very irregular regions like the kind of skinned irregular regions you get when you're messing around with Windows Media Center and Media Player, rather. Windows Media Player.
Is that the tool you use all the time to clip out pictures and post them?
Yeah, I've started using Kenny's tool pretty much all the time. It's always in the tray, and it is the tool that I decided to use now for my screenshots. Although there's another screenshot tool that I've been using recently that's I think just come out of beta. It's from Leon Bambrick, and this is something that actually won one of the awards in Mike Gunderloy's recent Larkware.com coding contest. It's called TimeSnapper. And he's actually put up a site at TimeSnapper.com, and this is very, very clever. This is one of those things that I think we've all thought about writing at one point or the other. And it's an automatic screenshot journal that runs in the background on your machine, automatically taking screenshots of your desktop every couple of minutes as long as you work on your system. It's
wow.
Only an 80K download. And what's clever about it is it creates a timeline. So if you're a person that gets paid by the hour, by the minute, and you said, well, what the heck am I doing this week? I need to fill out a time card. What was I doing Wednesday at 2 o'clock? You can actually run by and see a playback of your week. Now, I'm not talking about a Camtasia real-time playback, but I'm talking about a if you manage your time in 15-minute increments, what exactly were you doing about this time?
Wow, that's excellent.
It's fantastic. And it's free. It's 80K to download.
Huh.
And it uses .NET.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's really fantastic. I'm pretty impressed with what they turned out.
What better use for that new 400 gig hard drive you got for Christmas or a Hanukkah present, as the case may be?
I've actually found that they're doing a pretty good job. Of course, when you're doing something like this, you don't need a lot of you don't need a lot of detail. So the compression's not too bad. And 30K, 30K per shot or 50K per shot.
No problem.
For every 5 minutes is really trivial. You're looking at maybe a meg a day.
And they obviously have some sort of mechanism to go back through those and look at them in an organized way.
Yeah, they've actually got a very nice slider tool that shows you when the time of the day along with when the shot was taken. That's at timesnapper.com.
That is super cool, as the website says. Now, Scott, I see on the show notes page that you sent me that you want to talk about the Xbox 360.
Yeah, absolutely. And not in the typical way that people have been talking about it right now.
Which is, how can I get one?
Well, yeah, how can I get one? Of course, I pre-ordered mine in July.
Okay.
And just got it a couple weeks, about a week and a half ago. Certainly, I didn't have to stay overnight anywhere and sleep out front of Best Buy to try to get my Xbox 360.
But, oh, that's good.
I was on the second shipment, end of June when I ordered it was not early enough. But what I'm excited about with the Xbox 360 is its potential as a media hub. Readers of my blog or folks that want to go back and look at my blog, do a search for media. I've been searching for the ultimate kind of media hub system for years. I've tried UPnP, you know, the Universal Plug and Play, which is a protocol that will allow you to do discoverable media within your house. I run a UPnP server called Twonky. T-W-O-N-K-Y, if you search for Twonky or the Twonky Music Server. This is a free with an alternate consumer, alternate commercial upgrade.
UPnP server. Let's talk about that. I mean, you said it's something that lets you connect in your house and stuff, but isn't this like an automatic firewall port opener kind of protocol?
It's a protocol that does everything from what's called NAT traversal, network address translation traversal. It is a protocol that sits above TCP/IP that provides information about, I wish to talk to that system over there, figure out how I'm going to get over there.
Yeah.
And I want a certain kind of media, get me this media. I'm not really worried about how it happens.
Sort of like USB for software.
That's a very good way to put it. It is like USB for software. And you can get a UPnP server. Twonky is a very, very well-known one that is known for being very, very reliable. But the one that you can get very easily from Windows Media is the Windows Media Connect 2.0 stuff that was released just a month or so ago. This adds some new stuff in your control panel and a little guy in your tray, yet another thing in your tray, that lets you say, I want this folder and that folder presented as UPnP available shared content.
Hmm.
Windows Media also provides a little bit more granularity as far as access control. You actually have to specifically allow access from a machine. So I've got a big 250 gig removable hard drive that I have all of my media on. I've got pictures, I've got video, I've got music. I've set up each of those folders with Windows Media Connect to be shareable from my main machine. So then when I plug in another machine, whether it be a Windows Media Center system or a Xbox 360 in this case, I am then prompted to allow or disallow access to that machine.
So what does the Xbox 360 do in terms of accessing media?
So the Xbox 360 has a main dashboard that's much more advanced than the previous Xbox's dashboard, and it's got a vertical, they call it the blades. It's got a blade interface, which is basically tabs like the kind you would see on the left-hand side of Outlook. You know how you click inbox and it goes swoosh, and you click
right.
Calendar goes swoosh. Imagine that flipped on its side, flipped 90 degrees, and it goes back and forth. You've got Xbox Live, you've got games, and you've got media. So they've actually put media very much up front there. Mm. You go to media, and then you can say, I want pictures, I want video, I want music. So I can go down now on my HDTV, downstairs, turn on my Xbox with a universal remote control. This is very important for the wife acceptance
right.
factor,
right?
The WAF. Go downstairs, turn on the Xbox, she goes over to media, she hits pictures. It says, where do you want your media to come from?
Wow.
The choices are the Xbox hard drive, any external machine, like any computer that's not near the Xbox, a portable device like an iPod or a USB key. So she just clicks Scott PC, which is my machine upstairs, and then immediately has a folder hierarchy presented to her.
Wow.
Of all the photos.
So this is like, this is sort of a media center, you know, replacement, or it sounds like.
So this is actually a thing that is very confusing about the Xbox, in my opinion.
Yeah,
you don't need a media center or a media center PC edition to do this kind of stuff. This is built directly into the Xbox dashboard.
Wow, I had no idea.
If you have any PC, or check this out, if you have a Mac and you want to use the Twonky music server for the Mac or the Twonky media server that you pay for that runs cross-platform on the Mac, the Xbox 360 will talk to most any UPnP service.
Wow.
They've done a fantastic job of making the Xbox 360, able to talk to other things. This is all, again, without using any of the Windows Media Center stuff. I'll talk about that in a second. But I can look at video, I can look at music. So this has been able to basically move all of my pictures and all of my music out of my upstairs bedroom and into the living room where it belongs.
Right.
And since I've got my wife's family staying with us right now to help take care of the baby, we'll take them out. We'll go to the mountains, we'll take a bunch of pictures, we'll come back, and we'll immediately want to look at those pictures. As soon as they're on the computer, they can be viewed downstairs on the big screen TV.
Dude, this is fantastic.
When they want to look at the pictures even faster, I've got a very inexpensive Casio XLM digital camera, the XLM Z3. I can just take it and its little USB dock downstairs where the TV and the Xbox 360 are, plug it into the Xbox 360 right in the front. There are two USB ports. Go to the same exact place, media, within the Xbox 360 dashboard blade. Click on pictures, and it'll say, oh, from this digital camera? It'll automatically flatten the digital camera's file system. You know, most digital cameras, you don't actually get to have your photos in the root. It's usually under images, foo, whatever,
DSIM,
blah, blah, blah,
or whatever.
001.
Yep.
Those details are confusing to Mort. To the average Joe. So they flatten those things. They don't see them. You simply see pictures. Additionally, any USB key that has content like a JPEG or any video or any iPod. So I was actually able to take my iPod Nano. This was amazing. I plugged it in. There wasn't any big click. Oh, I'm searching for a driver. You know how when you plug a USB device into a Windows machine, there's the big, I think something's happening, let me look and see what I can do about it. Long pause. You plug the Nano in, boom, I go to music and it says Scott's Nano.
Sweet.
And I can play music directly off of the iPod.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
I've also got a Sony PSP, the PlayStation Portable, and I'm working on getting video to come off of that, which is going to be pretty hot.
Hey, this is Carl Franklin. Check out Test Complete from automatedqa.com. Test Complete does automated testing of Windows, .NET Framework, Java, and web applications. It's won Jolt Awards 2 years in a row from Software Development Magazine. Even though it's been voted best testing tool, Test Complete is really affordable. It costs just a fraction of what you'd have to pay for its nearest big-name competitor. Test Complete is standards-based and extensible with a well-documented plugin API. And the test scripts use familiar languages, VBScript, JavaScript, C# script, C++ script, and even Delphi script. You choose the language that works best for your team. You don't have to buy a dozen different modules to test all your applications. Test Complete is a full test development environment. It has features like an easy-to-use Windows test recorder that auto-creates test scripts, and an advanced script editor with features like syntax highlighting, code completion, and context-sensitive help. It has Test Execute, a lightweight utility for running distributed tests, and Test Recorder, a library for building tests into your application. And if you plan on using Visual Studio 2005 Team System, Test Complete integrates nicely with it and adds a new Test Complete test type. So, do yourself a favor and download a free evaluation copy of Test Complete at automatedqa.com. Now, Twonky, is it twonkyvision.de or do you have a...
Yeah, that's it.
Do you have a tiny URL for that?
No, that'll do.
All right, so twonkvision.de, Twonky Vision.
Exactly. Now, all of this that we've been talking about is simply the Windows Media Connect support, which is a fancy way of saying the Xbox 360 is the ultimate UPnP receiver. None of this has anything to do with Windows Media Center.
Right.
Now, Windows Media Center, has the notion of an extender. And an extender is really, I like to say that you're basically remote desktoping into your Windows Media Center. If you ever use Remote Desktop or VNC to go and remote the desktop. The original Xbox had a fantastically crappy Xbox extender. It was basically a CD that you put in your Xbox, and you got a 320 by 240 by 8-bit color, very little animation extender that gave you a watered-down, simpler version of the Windows Media Center experience. And we all know that the Media Center experience is very, very fluid, very, very gradient, very soft, very, you know, it's a very smooth experience.
Yeah.
Turns out that the Xbox 360 has this built in, this technology built in, where they do all of the rendering of the Windows Media Center interface on the Xbox 360 itself. So only the content is coming back and forth.
Wow, that's
good.
But
the actual work and the fluidity is there.
Smart.
Now, I originally tried doing this with a wireless adapter. I ended up using my original Xbox wireless adapter on the new Xbox 360 because I didn't want to spend $99 to buy the Xbox 360 wireless. But I found out that if you're going to be doing any kind of video or any larger MP3s, you really want to think about a wired connection. I know that everyone's saying with the 54 megabits, you can get some pretty good bandwidth with your wireless.
I agree.
The wired adapter is so much better. But what you can do with the some of the early Xbox 360s, you have to watch for this because there's a sticker on the outside of the box that says included for a limited time, a Media Center remote control. They give you a small Media Center remote control, but only on the first couple of shipments. You have to watch for this. If you don't have it, you spend $30 to buy this remote control.
Do you also have a Media Center PC, Scott?
I'm sorry. I do, in fact, have a Media Center PC that I built from scratch. If you go up and search for Media Center on my blog at hanselman.com/blog, then you'll see how I built it. I've got a complete parts list and how you can build the same thing from newegg.com.
I tried to build one, and it didn't work for some reason. And then I just said, screw it. I went and I bought a Dell Media Center PC.
Yeah, and they are notoriously hard to set up the drivers.
Yeah, and what's your impression of it? I mean, you know, the application itself, the Media Center application, seems to be my wife's favorite way to access music, you know, because of the icons and stuff, and it's very, very cool, and the pictures overlap each other and stuff. And my brother, you know, he does everything with Winamp. You know, he's got basically a network connection to his PC upstairs that has all his music on it downstairs, and he just uses Winamp for everything. But what's your impression of it? I mean, I know that there are a lot of people that aren't particularly all that happy with it.
The thing is that an interface like this, which it's called a 10-foot interface,
right,
that can be used from 10 feet away, is written in such a way that it hits 80% of the market. But sometimes myself or you or your brother is not that 80%.
Yeah.
If he likes Winamp and Winamp does what he needs it to do, then he's definitely not going to be satisfied with this. For example, I've got 5,300 MP3s, and I hate the music section of the Windows Media Center because I just can't get to my songs. I end up listening to songs. I listen to artists that start with like A and B, because they're at the top, right? So I listen to a lot of Aaliyah, you know. But there's a lot of music from Zimbabwe that I would love to listen to, but I can't figure out how to get there. I understand your concern, and I don't know what the answer is other than a little bit more thought about hotkeys, the notion of a page down that was a little bit more called out would be
How does the Xbox interface compare to the Media Center interface?
That's a very good point, because you can access your music either way with the Xbox 360. If you're using a standard PC, you can just use the built-in dashboard, or you can remote into the Media Center and then look at your data from there.
And does the built-in dashboard have the cool factor that the Windows Media PC has?
It doesn't. It's not as flashy. It's not as fluid. It doesn't have that kind of soft blue look. It's
right.
A much more garish look. Mm. Although the Xbox 360 interface does allow theming. So you can have themes and skins that you can download using microcash, which are called Microsoft points. For $25, I think I bought 2,000 Microsoft points.
Wow.
And then for 200 or 300 points, you can download a theme. So you can get the Portland Trailblazers theme, or you can get the Brazil soccer team theme or the Call of Duty 2 theme, and it'll skin the whole thing. So you can change the interface, but it's not as fluid as the Media Center.
Right,
but
okay.
It gets you there faster. I totally thought I would be remoting into the Media Center to view my images and to view our music.
Mm-hmm.
More and more, I'm ending up using the Xbox directly, which has been very, very interesting. And I didn't expect it to go down like that.
Yeah.
But from a wife acceptance factor standpoint, she had a couple of ladies come over from her work recently, and they were able to sit down with our Harmony 880 universal remote control. They pushed play Xbox from the activity screen on the Harmony remote control and turned on the Xbox, turned on the TV, turned on the HDTV, changed all the inputs to the right place, and then just using the up, down, left, right, and the OK button, we're able to look at pictures of the baby. And that is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, I can't express how powerful that is.
Yeah, that's the experience you want, absolutely.
I feel like with the Xbox 360 and with this Harmony 880 remote control, and believe me, I've tried every remote control, and if you want to check out remote control information, you go to remotecentral.com. Fantastic okay. website, and their forums are unbelievable. The Harmony 880 actually added Xbox 360 support as a simple download. So I can I plug the Harmony 880 into my computer, went up to harmonyremote.com literally the day the Xbox showed up at my doorstep, downloaded the new activities and all the new content. Uh-huh. And I've actually been playing Bejeweled using my Harmony remote control. So I don't even need the media remote control that came with the Xbox.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's seamlessly integrated with the house.
How do you plug the remote control in? Is it USB?
And it interestingly, it uses the tiny USB adapter. You know those little, the USB A and B, and then there's the really tiny one.
Right.
You plug it in, you go up to a website. The entire application for the Harmony remote is done with a website. And then they create a packet of information with a special extension. Then when you download that, instead of saving the packet, you hit open. It opens into a browser helper application that then decodes the IR codes from that packet and then downloads it directly into the Harmony.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's the bomb.
Wow. You know, I just got a couple of new TVs end of the year. I had been holding out. I've had CRT TVs for years and years and years. This is the first time, you know, this Christmas that we've actually gotten with it in terms of home media. And so I got a plasma TV for the living room and a smaller LCD TV for the bedroom. And so this is a welcome, a timely information from you, for me. Yeah, I was planning on getting an Xbox 360 after, you know, the next wave, you know, in January when the next wave comes out, and hopefully they'll have fixed that little overheating problem by that time.
You know, interestingly, I haven't had that problem. I'm not sure if that is something that's happening for certain people's machines.
Yeah, I think it's only if you like keep it on a carpet or something where there's no way for the air to get out the bottom.
Actually, you know, not on the topic of overheating, but on another topic, don't even bother turning your Xbox up and down. Just keep it horizontal. It turns out that the vertical position is not ideal for the DVDs, and they have a tendency to slide a little bit down, and there's no hooks to actually hold the DVDs in. So there's
good
been a
for
number
the hard
of DVDs
drive,
that have been getting scratched.
Yeah.
It's better for the hard drive to have it have the whole thing on its side, but it's much better for the DVDs if you have the device horizontal. So yeah. I'm keeping mine horizontal.
And if the DVD isn't accessible, you don't really have much of an experience.
Not at all. So. Not at all. Let's talk about the bug fixes of the day as we head towards the end of the Hansel Minutes.
Okay.
So I've got two pretty good bugs right now. The first one was an ASP.NET bug. And again, when I say bug, I'm not necessarily saying it was something that Microsoft did. It might
These
be something
problems
that I
that
did.
You've
These are just
come
problems that we've solved. So we're not impugning anyone. Most often it's something that I've done wrong and then fixed later. So I'll call it a bug, even though it's learning from my screw up.
Mm-hmm.
And this one's up on my blog at tinyurl.com/7kbmy. And this was an ASP.NET bug where I would have people visit my site and get foreign languages that they didn't speak. And I actually showed up on my site recently on a particular page and noticed that chunks of my page were in German.
Huh?
And I literally did a double take. I visited my site and the dates, usually it says Friday, November, whatever. it said, you know, I don't even know how to say it in German. It said it in German, and it freaked me out. I visited a couple of pages. I visited another one. It was in Turkish. Then I realized that one of the performance optimizations that I had done, since my site had been getting more and more traffic, was that I had added the output cache directive. It's a single line that you put at the top of your ASPX page
right.
that says, cache the content of this particular page. I'd added that, and I put in duration. I think I put 1,800 seconds, and I put in vary by param equals star, saying no matter what's on the URL and the query string, I want you to cache a different version for each thing that appears in the query string.
Okay.
So if I said, permalink.aspx GUID equals, and then whatever the GUID equals, I would get one cached version of the page per value.
So every page is its own version.
Every page is its own version.
For everybody. That's
exactly.
That's a lot of memory being used there, isn't it?
It turned out that I was caching the it's actually not for everybody. It's based on the param, saying vary by param.
Right, it's based on the
param,
so
the
it's
stream.
Not session-based. Yeah, okay.
Right, okay. So let's say that there's a page no one's ever visited before. It's just sitting out there. It's not been cached.
Mm-hmm.
And a German visits. I'm actually going to, DOSBlog does this automatically. Oh. I look at his HTTP headers, specifically the accept language header, and I see that he's a German. So then I, being friendly guy that I am, will render the dates and various things that I am able to, the DOSBlog interface, in German.
There you go.
But
that's
because
the
he was the
page.
First guy, he was the first guy that visited the site, that's the one that gets cached. If an Englishman shows up later, I don't bother looking. I simply know that I've cached something, and I show blindly what was cached.
Now, we should also mention, Scott, that you are writing DOSBlog. I mean, this started with Clemens Vasters, right? He wrote the original version?
It started actually with Chris Anderson, who wrote BlogX.
Oh, really? Okay.
Then Clemens, in a caffeinated overnight freaking code session, wrote the first version of DOSBlog, put it up on got.net. Somewhere around version 1.5 or 1.6, I got involved. Omar was around. Omar Shaheen, shaheen.com, was around somewhere in 1.5. Omar and I have pretty much been the DOSBlog stewards since 1.6.
Okay.
And we're on 1.8 now. And we've got, actually, as an aside, we've got new stuff going on in the DOSBlog world. We've got a new DOSBlog information site at DOSBlog.info, www.dosblog.info.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a whole series of forums. We like to say they're for us. They're at dosblog.us.
Okay.
So we've got support forums at dosblog.us, and we've got information at dosblog.info.
So how did you solve the problem? Did you vary by culture?
Yeah, we had to actually vary by header because the culture information, the accept language header, is located inside of the HTTP headers. So the output cache now says output cache, vary by param equals star, vary by header equals accept hyphen language. So now each version of the page gets each language gets its own version of the page. So there's a German version that's cached, there's a Turkish version, etc. It does
cool.
add some more memory usage, but it gives me the same experience.
I can imagine the email, hey, I went to this page and what are you trying to do to me?
Yeah, it was a problem, and I realized that it had actually been in there for a very, very long time. It wasn't actually a DOSBlog bug because it was my output caching that I had added,
right.
But a valuable thing to know at any rate.
Okay, and finally, there's a publisher policy issue that you had that you wanted to talk about this week.
Yeah, publisher policy is something that's not very well understood, but in a nutshell, you know, that .NET has this notion of versioning that's very intrinsic to the notion of an assembly, and the notion of versioning is very fundamental to the way the .NET framework and the loader works. You've got these four numbers: major, minor, build, revision. And when a publisher, like I'll use, you know, my buddy Peter Blum as an example, is publishing something, he decides to release his validation and more controls. He might say these are version 2.0.0.0. And he'll put them in the global assembly cache so that they are available to anyone and any machine, anything rather on the entire machine. They become a system-wide assembly. And then later on, I will write code to Peter's stuff and I will be intrinsically linked to 2.0.0.0.
Mm-hmm.
If something gets fixed in Peter's stuff and he has to release 2.0.1, do I have to recompile? Or can Peter provide some XML configuration document that would indicate to my application, I strongly recommend that because you're on version 2.0 that has some known bug, that you in fact not receive what you asked for, but instead the bug-fixed version. So when he puts his application into the GAC, he can include a signed publisher policy file that says, I am Peter Blum, I am the publisher,
right.
I have signed this, and I am going to insist that anyone who requests 2.0 gets 2.0.1.
Yep.
So that's publisher policy, and this
right.
is for fixing bugs. So Peter Thomas, a guy that works at Carillion, who is one of our deep understanding of the loader and deep understandings of installer type people, was doing some debugging on some behavioral quirks and things, and he had a publisher policy file with a version of 3.1, and he had another one for, you know, for testing purposes that was version 20, so 2.0.0.0.0. So he fully expected that the version 20 would be loaded, so then he would see within the Fusion logs how things were working,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't happening. It was in fact happening in the wrong order. He was noticing that single digit ones were working, but double digit ones were not. He could put in a version 9 and things worked, but version 10, version 11, version 20, things like this were not valid. So publisher policy doesn't appear to work in the way that we would think it would, with you using double digit major versions. This is in .NET 1.x.
Wow.
So in .NET 1.x, and when you're using publisher policy, you really should avoid double digit version numbers because it appears that they're being sorted alphabetically rather than numerically. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but that is what appears.
So there's really no workaround for this? This is just a bug?
There really isn't. And in 2.0, this has been indirectly fixed due to using something called the policy cache. And there's a gentleman named Jung Feng who is a Microsoft employee, and he has talked about the policy cache at his blog. And if you can go up to my site, the publisher policy bug is tinyurl.com/cmm5w,
mm-hmm.
and I have a link to Jung Feng's site from there. It talks about the publisher policy cache. The code with that particular calculation error is avoided using this policy cache. This is a very, very little known bug. It will likely be fixed in the Longhorn timeframe.
Uh-huh.
So we'll probably have this fixed by next summer. But it's fairly obscure. I doubt that there are people out there with version 20 of their particular application. But if you are doing publisher policy on .NET 1.x, do avoid using double-digit version numbers or you might not get what you expect.
Hmm. Good point.
Crazy stuff. This is the kind of weird stuff that we end up popping into.
Well, this is valuable, I think. And let's hear from the listeners out there. Do you think this is good? I mean, I personally, every time I talk to Scott, I learn something. And let us know. Send your comments to .NET Rocks@franklins.net. And let's see what people think.
Yeah, I really, you know, in all my talks, whether I'm talking on stage or with an Ineta thing, my total goal, and you can see this in my blog, because in my blog I am pretty terse. I'm not very verbose.
Right.
I don't want to waste anybody's time. So, yeah. You know, I encourage you to listen to this podcast on double speed using the Windows Media, whatever it takes for you to squeeze as much information out of it as possible.
Or depending on the time of day, half speed.
Exactly. The point is, I want them to know that we will, if they find this boring, if they find the chatter boring, they want more chatter, tell us and we'll do it.
Right. All right, Scott. You try to get some sleep and keep washing your hands. You know, what can I say? Poop happens.
Carl, I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to use your equipment and to use your expertise and kind of introduce some new kind of content, hopefully, that people will find useful. We're going to keep it short. We're going to keep it sweet. We're going to keep it dense and keep it coming.
And Scott, what can I say? Thank you for agreeing to do this. And again, you know, send us your comments, your threats and everything else. And we'll talk to you next week on Hansel Minutes.
Hansel Minutes is produced by Pwop Productions, providing professional audio and podcasting services online at www.pwop.com. Pwop, it's time to get your impact back.